Welcome to the Table Podcast, where we discuss issues of God and culture. Brought to you by Dallas Theological Seminary.
The next category is loosening relationships. There's seven on this list. The fifth is loosening relationships. And the claim here is, and this might be something we might maybe even disagree about. The claim is there are fewer meaningful relationships and less community. There's more individualized life. There was a book years ago called Bowling Alone that was studying this. But there are changes in how those relationships are maintained. I think the argument here is that there are more superficial relationships, and there are more relationships that stay in touch with one another because of technology, because of distance. But there are really, actually, when you look at it, fewer meaningful, deep relationships or long-term relationships.
Yeah, I think when that book was written, you know, so much was just happening.
Yeah.
You know, I don't even know if Facebook was completely realized at that point. And so I think what we have to realize, I think this is what's important for the church, is the nature of relationships is a little bit different.
Yes.
As older people, we look at the kids on their phones and we're like going, oh, come on, be with people. You don't know how to be with people. And you know what? Maybe they do.
Yeah.
You know I mean, but they're being with them in a different way.
That's
we don't know yet.
I think that's fair. The rest of this one goes, because it's more complex than what he's arguing. He says, they move more, so they have less time to be close to a consistent circle of friends, but they stay in touch with those separated far more than the previous generation. So the result is they're less likely to be tied to an organization for the long term. They're less institutionally tied in because they're more mobile. If I can say it that way. They still volunteer, okay, but the volunteering isn't with an organization that I'm going to be with over decades. The volunteering is related to, I want to do this and help in this way. So it's more scattered in terms of its associations. And then finally, the way they maintain their social relationships is completely changing. Those are the observations that are being made. And I think that's true, that the mapping that goes on, the way in which relationships happen. I actually think I have a metaphor for this. And again, I'm going to use my son because his life is so contrastive to my own. And that is when Stephen was in college, and even when he was a young adult, just out of college and in graduate school, his social time was spent in packs. I can say it that way. You know, there was a group of about 15 or 20 friends, and my joke with him is, what are you doing tonight? It would be about 8 o'clock in the evening, and he hadn't made his plans yet. And, you know, I knew that somewhere between 8:30 and 9 o'clock, his friends would either text or phone, and they would decide what they're going to do, and about 9:30 he would go out and do what he's going to do. Completely different than my life, okay? Mm-hmm. We dated, okay? A pack for us was a double date. I mean, okay, all right, it's a close friend of you hanging out with, et cetera. We would know, you know, 5:30, 6 o'clock in the evening what we were going to do and have it planned out and go through it, you know. And so it just, I think that's just a picture of the difference and also I think it's a picture of, and we haven't talked about this, the kind of the ubiquitous elephant in the room, the way in which technology and communication have changed the way people socially relate. And what they're capable of doing and the way they plan and all the features that are a part of that. So these loosening relationships is a part of the equation. I'm going to go through the rest of the list so we can talk about them all together.
Okay.
Globalization is the sixth, and this is obvious. We get news and we have competition from everywhere. So we're not in the little isolated local bubbles that we used to function in. I like to use this illustration. In the first century, the average person lived in a 30-mile radius. Now, think about that for a second.
And that's all they probably knew.
That's all they knew about, et cetera. Right. I mean, a 30-mile bubble. Now, that's 15 miles in each direction. I mean, that's not a very far, that's not a very big lifespan. I remember hearing the story of someone when we lived in Scotland. It was a father of one of our close friends in a little town of Torfinns of 800 people in northeast Scotland, and his father had slept in the same home every night of his life except for one night. He was 79 years old. Wow. Except for one night, and that was by accident because he got stuck fogged in Edinburgh and couldn't get home.
Wow.
So, when this guy was telling us this story about his dad, we went, I can't even imagine that, you know. So the point is, look at how localized that is versus how global much of our relationships are. There's a higher percentage of non-citizens in our population. going from, and this is male and female numbers, from 4 to 6% to 13 to 18%, and that's probably low in comparison to where we are now. I mean, that's continuing to expand. So one of the effects of globalization is not only that we're more connected and we're hearing from other parts of the world and our world is bigger and we're living in a larger sphere, but the world also, as this has often been said, is coming to us. We get the same mix here. I think I'm right in saying that when my kids were in high school at Hillcrest, there were like 178 languages represented in the high school. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's staggering to think about. You know, when I was
people are not assimilating to the country that they're moving. I mean, Germany's going through a major conflict with this, saying we're losing our identity as a nation, mm-hmm. because we've not asked. You know, in the United States, we have a whole different set of values
right.
that guide us, but. But that's one of the challenges, right? Is that we're trying to figure out how to be multicultural.
Exactly right.
And groups can connect in ways that they couldn't, you know.
Yeah. And it's not unusual when you move to a foreign culture to look for people who are like you to hang together, to feel a little bit of stability in the midst of the adjustments mm-hmm. that sure. you're having to make.
Sure. Absolutely.
And that takes a couple of generations actually to sort itself out. Mm-hmm. And then that's interesting for the churches that are built that way, because ethnic churches, I hear this in Chinese and Korean churches all the time, where the Chinese or Korean parents are talking about how their kids are so assimilated to America that they feel like they're leaving, you know, they're leaving their roots, and all the anxiety that creates. Well, that, again, just a small snapshot of a large area that impacts in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And then the last one, the obvious one that we've been talking about a lot, and that is the information explosion with the internet and feeling comfortable using technology. I mean, this group really grew up with the computer from day one, as opposed to...
Well, our graduating seniors have never been alive when the internet wasn't pervasive.
Yes.
Yeah, so those that are entering college as freshmen have never known life without the internet.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And our freshmen entering in were barely alive when 9/11 happened. So
that's right.
To think about how those things, that's going to be ancient history to them.
Right. You know? Exactly. Mm-hmm. It makes so the point here is that all of this is impacting the church. Mm-hmm. We've got marriage and children and employment opportunities and education that are pushing and controlling in many ways students' lives and choices in this early period, that's impacting what they have to do. And what's really key in a lot of that is the way in which coming to a family tends to push one to church, but with that being delayed, that's not happening. And so... and with all the other choices that we've talked about, because of the choices people make about how they live, and in some cases they're aware about how churches feel about that kind of thing. So there's these disconnects. So the large question in the last 10 minutes that we have together is, what is the church to do? How do you cope with all this variation, and what is it that's supposed to happen with this age group?
Well, we just did a study of pastors, just trying to get an understanding of what they're experiencing in their churches as it relates to teenagers. And one of the things that we found, 51% of pastors said the hardest group to reach are 20-somethings and college-age students.
Mm-hmm.
That was the largest group. The next largest was high school students at 27%
mm-hmm.
Of pastors said that's the hardest group for them to reach. So this is obviously a challenge for the church, and it's something that, you know, is important. And there's a lot of shifts going on. The American Bible Society just released a report looking at scripture engagement mm-hmm. among the generational categories,
mm-hmm.
and they broke them into four groups: friendly, engaged, neutral, and antagonistic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so among the millennials, so all adults, 17% were antagonistic.
Okay,
but among the millennials, 29% were antagonistic toward the Bible, meaning they had a negative view. Those that were neutral, they didn't have much feeling. It's about the same mm-hmm. for millennials and all adults. But when we look at the engaged people who are actually using Scripture, 21% of all adults read it at least 4 times a week and have a very high view of it.
Mm-hmm.
Only 14% of millennials. So there's a really different way that generations are using Scripture even in their lives, mm-hmm. and that's shaping, I think, a generation. I mean, to have that kind of antagonistic views of something.
Now, how much of that is a combination of what I would view to be two factors? One would mm-hmm. be the presence of technology and the amount of time kids spend on technology, so they're and they're accessing information and playing video games and that kind of the variety of things that are the choices that they have. And then the second is the general cultural discussion about the Bible, I would say, is mostly negative in terms of this is an ancient book, you don't really need to take it seriously, that kind of thing. Is that the double whammy that we're getting?
I think you're in the middle of that too with your with your discussions over the years with Ehrman and some of the things along those lines. So I think that is definitely a factor, and most of the discussion has been on a popular level fairly negative. And the voices like yourself and others who would be defending, you know, the reliability, the veracity of Scripture are not being given the time or the media time that it needs to get a fair hearing. So I think that's definitely an issue. What is ironic about the whole thing is with technology the way it is, and I don't know about you, but I can't tell you how many versions of the Bible on this little right here that I can take with me, and I can study and do incredible things that the scholars of old would just die to have access to things like this, the things that we can do and we can access, and that's all available to these young millennials
I've just come from a week at Logos Software doing mobile ed for them and seeing about what it is. And of course, the Logos program was an its starting point was here.
Was here at DTS, that's right.
CD Word Library, where we were contemplating what we could do with technology in the study of Scripture. And I love to tell the story of when I look at backgrounds in Scripture, I used to walk into class talking about Second Temple Jewish resources, and I'd walk in with a stack of books about yay high and hand them out one at a time so the students could be familiar with them. But the only way they could access them would be to go to the library.
That's right.
Said, now I'm at the point, the last few years, I'm at the point where I don't have to walk in with a single copy of a hard copy book. Everything's on the computer. I can put it up on the screen. Everything is a click away. And I think about what that means for me in actually doing my work with Scripture, and I go, talk about opportunities. Mm. I've got opportunities to do things I couldn't have dreamed of doing when I first started teaching.
You couldn't live long enough to access the materials that you would need to do the things
that
you
can
do right
now. The time that it would take me,
exactly.
I could know what question to ask, but the actual time it would take me to do that, I would have gone, okay, I will write that one piece in my life.
Yeah.
You know, now I can do it. And because of the speed of light and other things, you know, boom. If it's not there in about 5 seconds, I'm upset. So, you know, so it's...
So there's the question. I mean, it's never been more accessible than it is right now. Mm-hmm. And yet, they're not accessing it.
They're not accessing it. And there's actually negative, you know, views toward the Bible and Scripture. You know, and some of it is we're moving from literacy to visualcy.
Right, right.
You know, in the way that we interact. And back in 2008, UC San Diego did a really interesting study, and they found that the typical American receives about 34 gigabytes of information a day, but only 0.1% of that is text.
Hmm.
So, you know, what we're realizing is that words are not the information that people are taking in, and that we don't know what the effect of that is. We don't know how that's changing.
This relates to the way I think about communication, because there's an exercise that I do when I'm doing cultural engagement stuff, in which I tell them, my daughter was once buying furniture, and I'm not an interior designer, so while they were at the store and my wife was helping them, I was off to the side watching MTV, and everything would come up about every 4 seconds. Yeah. You know, I would count how long a visual was up there, and I'm not even counting all
it's
the stuff
long.
That's going on the side. I didn't get to 4 any time in a 5-minute period. So I called my wife over and I said, "I'm going to do something for you. I'm going to count how long the vision is up there, the visual is up there." And I went through the same exercise. Another 2 minutes, I never got to 4. And then I turned to her and I said, "That's how young people are processing information. It's in bursts. Okay, if you look at our magazines, et cetera, they're structured to be quick and crisp." And so the idea of going through an outline, okay?
I mean, to write a paper?
What in the world is that?
I mean,
and then think about that in contrast to a web page.
Okay? And yet we have a generation that's reading some of the biggest books, Harry Potter and the Twilight series. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
there's
interesting, you know, contrast.
Exactly
too,
right.
Right? And I don't know what that means for the church, but I mean, I think if there's one thing that I would tell a church right now, just based on the millennial situation, is when we have to think about how we go to where they're at,
right,
and be in their space,
right,
And we have to think about how many clicks does it take to get them to a place where we can talk to the gospel?
Uh-huh.
We want to go from zero to gospel in as short a period of time, in four laws if possible.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And the reality is for this generation, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
And so we have to really be interested in them, being with them and helping them. And when you consider that, you know, that 70% of those 82% that wanted to be married said that they want to be fully developed as a person, that's part of what we offer as the church,
right?
How to become whole.
Right.
But we want to move people so quickly somewhere that we're not willing to walk with them a little while.
Right.
Till maybe that moment happens. And so maybe it's that our churches need to be offering career and vocational counseling.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we need to provide mentoring programs with people in our church in different industries that connect with teenagers and people in the community. Maybe we need to just have, maybe we need to put together parks and make our space more community accessible and be okay with dad bringing the kids to use the playground with a six pack like he would at the park down the street, and be okay with that and not necessarily feel like we have to sit down and share the gospel with them right then, right there.
Right.
And I think that's one of the things that we have to be a little more present with people, because there's a lot of skepticism and a lot of mistrust in what we're trying to do as Christians in the church.
I agree with that. I think the church's strategy's got to be a lot more holistic than it has been. One of the things that, you know, at the risk of plugging Gabe and the fact that he's going to be here, one of the things he talks about is that a lot of the problem with the millennials is that they've watched the older generation live out their Christian lives and they've gone, it ain't working for these people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really want any of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really, and at the risk of using a cliched term, we need authentic Christians who are living a life of discipleship with Jesus in front of this other generation. And as Mark said, the mentoring and those kinds of real discipleship relationships with the younger people, so that they can watch and see that, you know what, if you do it the way Scripture tells you to do it, it actually does work pretty well. Your life does go better.
Again, I'm going to use a picture or a metaphor, and I'm going to come back to the outline in the webpage, because I think this is what's being said. You know, the outline kind of has this is what one way to structure things, and here's the sequence and the order. It's your four laws. But a web page is more like, think about the possibilities of the choices about which I access information. There's no rule on a web page as to what you go to next once you get that up on the screen. And you're full of those choices, interacting with those choices. And I really think that interacting with young people who are used to dealing with web pages, so I can say, is more like dealing with a web page than it is with an outline.
Mm-hmm.
So you're walking alongside the person to use your picture, and you realize there are seven or eight different ways this thing could go.
Mm-hmm.
And you go with the flow. Sometimes with one person you might go this way, with another person you might go that way because of the way things are. And you're interacting in a more open-ended as opposed to a formulaic kind of way. And you're treating them as the individual that they are in the midst of the process. And you're also interacting with them in a way that's analogous to the way they've handled information all their life. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a way of picturing kind of what we're talking about.
Well, if our only transaction is to try and proselytize or convert somebody, then that becomes the basis of the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow I think there has to be something more than that. And I think it's sniffed out, right? That this is transactional.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this generation is going, are you willing just to be with me?
Yeah, I don't want to be a notch on a gun belt that's a number on an evangelistic list.
Well, I think we've enjoyed this really interesting time where we could just, you know, the field of dreams, if you build it, they will come, right? And if we put church on, everybody will come. And I think about 80% of the population was reachable that way.
Mm-hmm.
10 years ago and earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think it's more like 20%. So the mega churches are doing a great job capturing that 20%, but that's not transferable to a smaller church.
Yeah.
Because the pool of people to be attract in is very small.
Right, right.
So when you're dealing with this other group, you have to actually go and be where they are at and be present. And so I think right now, some of the greatest innovation is going to come from smaller churches that are willing to literally take a walk around their community and say, God, what are you doing here? And why are we here where we're at?
And where can we join in and get to know people, et cetera?
Not trying to get people to come in 20 or 30 miles away.
Yeah.
But literally, in our neighborhood, our walkable you know, yeah. radius.
The old parish concept.
It yeah. is exactly.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
You know, I think we have to go back to that if we're really going to be effective.
Yeah. And one of the things that I tell I work with 10th grade boys on a regular basis in our church, and one of the things that I tell them every week and pray every week is, you guys are representing Jesus in every sphere of influence. You need to do that well. Mm-hmm. And the local church has got to do that. They've got to represent who Jesus is, not just in word, which we've gotten good at, but we've got to do it in terms of all of our deeds. Mm-hmm. And all of our relationships. Most millennials aren't attracted to a brand in terms of a church brand. They're more attracted to a cause. Mm-hmm. They want to be involved in something that actually does something that makes a difference, mm-hmm. that they can see tangibly, this is helping people, this is changing the way things are. And churches that are involved in the community that are making a difference are very attractive to the millennials.
Well, we our time is not more than gone, but it's been quick and brief and
The fastest 53 minutes in the world.
Yeah, exactly right. But
always happens.
And it's but the start. Well, I'm sure I'll have you guys back to talk about more of this, because it's a topic that is going to be with us for a while, and dealing with the challenges of a shifting life. This is one of the great cultural shifts that we're in the midst of. Is something churches are going to have to wrestle and think through. And as I said, we're just a couple of weeks away from a conference that's going to focus on this and try and help pastors and churches deal with this in a significant way. And I think that senior pastors and their staffs, particularly their youth leadership, will benefit from the conversation. And hopefully they've benefited from what you've shared with us today. In fact, I'm confident that they have been.
Yeah, I just want to encourage people to think positively about millennials, mm-hmm. not negatively. Yeah. I think that changes everything.
Yep.
You know, they're not broken, whatever. Mm-hmm. We're all broken.
Yeah.
Every generation is broken.
Absolutely.
Look at them in terms of the opportunities that we have to play into. And you change that paradigm, and I think that's a lot of what we're going to do at Prone to Wander, is try and change the paradigm about how we're engaging them. But I think that's really important for leaders.
Well, thank you, Mark, and thank you, Jay. We're glad you could join us, and we thank you for joining us here at the table. We discuss issues of God and culture, and we look forward to you coming back on our next podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Table Podcast. For more podcasts like this one, visit dts.edu/thetable. Dallas Theological Seminary. Teach truth, love well.